Normally, our gut microbiome, those 100 trillion organisms that live in our gut, educate our immune system about what's important and what's not important. 80% of your immune system sits on the other side of the wall of your gut. Normally, I lived in England for a while. I compare them to a bobby on the street with a billy club, and that's his only armament. So not much would get through past this protective barrier and the wall of our gut. Now, unfortunately, our gut microbiome is decimated by the foods we eat, how we actively try to kill it with the foods we eat, how we try to starve it with the foods we eat. So that barrier is basically gone. And that education to our immune system is gone. Now we've got an immune system that, rather than a bobby with a billy club, now our immune system is armed with a Kevlar vest, two AK-47s, and they're ready for anything that even looks out of the ordinary. They're going to shoot to kill and ask questions later.
All right, welcome back to the Better Human Podcast. Dr. Gundry, welcome back, my friend.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you back. I'm a fan of your work. I've been following you for a long time. I think on the first show I shared with you that your first book was a big impact. That was the one that introduced me to this whole concept of gut health and leaky guts, and, you know, really changed a lot of the way I was navigating my own health, specifically because we've got in my family history gut issues, you know, cancer and, you know, a lot of different gut issues. So, you know, really making that a priority was important. So we are here today to talk about your new book, Gut Check. Congratulations.
Well, thanks very much. It's time for a gut check. That's true.
Right. And you know, look, you've done a lot of work on this stuff and gut health and the microbiome. And, you know, the question that I wanted to sort of kick off with you. So going through a lot of your books and a lot of your work previously, what was the thing that brought up this book? I mean, tell us more about Gut Check. And what are you seeing in your patients? I mean, what are some commonalities when it comes down to people's health and diets and just gut health in general? That was going to be my next question. So how do you measure it? And then what is the process or what is some of the things we can do to repair the leaky gut?
Mm-hmm. In all my books, even though I don't swear, I call them little pieces of shit, which is actually what they are.
Which is true.
That's what they are.
So if they're not eating gluten, how are they producing all those antibodies? Zero. Truthfully, I came from South Africa, and the first time we heard that was when we went to Canada, and it was like, this is like a North American thing.
Yeah, right? That's right. And okay, America.
So it's true, like, we can't redevelop or regrow the bacteria in our microbiome. Like, once it's gone, it's gone. Is that the case?
No, we can't.
Oh, we can't.
We can.
Okay, so let's go there. How do we?
Yeah, that's one of the
get all these good nutrients and bacteria back into our microbiome, right? I mean, hear about, you know, eating yogurt or, you know, probiotics. So, I mean, is it that simple or is it a little more in depth than that?
Ray goes, there's no. There.
Jose, I play tennis.
It's be ridiculous. Yeah, that's a big surface.
Right.
So how does that happen? Well,
right. The more the merrier.
The more the merrier, correct. And then they looked at inflammation markers. So the guys who just got the fiber didn't change their gut diversity, and they didn't change their inflammatory markers. It was only the guys that got the fermented foods and the prebiotic fiber that got more gut diversity and lowered their inflammation.
So I was going to say, it's like a recipe. You need these different components in order to make the cake afterwards. And as long as we mix them in the right way and, you know, we bake them for the right amount of time, we'll end up with a good cake. And if anyone knows anything about baking, it's a little bit difficult to get the result that you're looking for. Exactly.
Right? That's true. You leave out one ingredient and something's really that's wrong. It.
So you mentioned, I want to go back to the leaky gut test. I'm actually really interested in it. Like, I would like to get a leaky gut test. So how would I go about that? Do I do it through you and your practice, or can we just go to any lab and get the blood work done and then send it off?
We were.
I think we've seen you doing interviews together.
He said, hey, you know, I'd like to do this. And I said, so he and his wife did it, and their son, and he's going, you know, what the heck? I've got leaky gut. And I said, yeah, I could have predicted that. I've been around you long enough. And he said, well, right. What the heck? You know, now what do I do? So, yeah, it's amazing. Hippocrates was right about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at a baby, right, when they're born with the perfect microbiome, and, you know, they ward off every ailment and illness, I mean, quite naturally, right? And then, again, you know, it was your first book and your early work that introduced me to the whole concept of, like, we've destroyed our microbiome because of exactly the fast food and the easy life and the cereal boxes. And, you know, as you were saying fiber, I was just, like, picturing, like, you know, Wheaties, like that. You know, grain, which is, I'm glad you redefined that for us, because that's not what we're describing for people to get their fiber from, right?
Right.
And there's a lot of those vegetables and fruits which are going to give you those natural fibers. But again, it's about getting some of these other things in. You know, I was also thinking, you know, which would be super cool for you to do, if you could create like a little bottle of bacteria that people drink every day. Like, I used to have a fish tank, right? And you'd put this bacteria in the fish tank and it would grow, because like a saltwater fish tank, you know, you need a lot of the different type of bacteria and elements to really sustain that environment, right? So I almost look at like our gut, like that sort of, that was always my sort of visualization, which is this fish tank, which is like, do we have all the right sort of ingredients and bacteria and, you know, elements going in order to create a sustainable environment for these things to live? And if you know anything about a saltwater fish tank, I mean,
I used to raise saltwater fish. You're right.
It takes one little thing just to throw the entire tank off. And like, you could lose thousands of dollars of like corals and fish and stuff like that. So,
yeah, you add one more fish than that environment can take and the whole tank dies.
So is it even possible to do what I just said, which is like create this bottle of bacteria? It's like a supplement that one can take. It's almost like living bacteria.
Yeah, I try. I do write a lot of books, but each book tends to build on a previous book, or I'd often go down a rabbit hole in some book and end up places I didn't know. But this book is kind of, I guess, the best summary of it. You know, my monster book was The Plant Paradox, and actually still is. Mm-hmm. But that book was, it came out almost 7 years ago now. And it's hard to believe. I still see patients 6 days a week, even Saturday and Sunday. And on Fridays, I'm at Gundry MD in LA. So I still work 7 days a week. And I suppose people always say, well, gee whiz, you know, with the success of the Plant Paradox series and with what are you still seeing patients for? And I guess the answer is, by seeing patients, I get to learn from them and get to advance my knowledge and tell people what I've learned. And so Gut Check, in a lot of ways, is okay. In the 7 years since I wrote The Plant Paradox, what have I learned? What, you know, you're not sitting still. And what have you learned that surprised you? Why do you keep seeing patients? And so Gut Check is really the culmination. In fact, the final chapter before the recipes and the eating plan is The Plant Paradox 2.0. And it's, you know, what did I learn after all this? And so that's what Gut Check is about. Well, that's Hippocrates, you know, said 2,500 years ago that all disease begins in the gut. A couple of years ago, I gave a talk to a GI meeting in Paris, France, that Hippocrates was right. All disease begins in a leaky gut. And Alessio Fasano from Harvard has also written a paper to the same effect. And I think that is true. Leaky gut. Yeah, leaky gut. And if you had asked me certainly 20 years ago when I first was getting into this, what I thought about leaky gut, I really would have told you it was pseudoscience, you know. But then really thanks to Dr. Fasano finding the mechanism of how tight junctions in the wall of our gut are broken by lectin-like compounds like gluten, for instance. And then my association with all autoimmune diseases come from a leaky gut. And we attack our own cells with molecular mimicry. Mm-hmm. That's been repeatedly confirmed over and over again. And I've, you know, published papers that 94% of people who come to me with an autoimmune condition go into remission and are off their meds within 9 to 12 months on following the program, which is pretty doggone good.
And the programs are all diet, right? I mean, that's really sort of the baseline for this.
Yeah, it's all diet and a few supplements that I think are very useful. You know, I talk about vitamin D probably. It's just so critical in everything, particularly in healing leaky gut, that people need to be aware of why vitamin D, which is a hormone, it's not a vitamin at all, but why that's so important. The other thing I talk about in this book, or try to make an even stronger case, although I see 80% of my practice is autoimmune disease, but I'm convinced that coronary artery disease is an autoimmune attack against our blood vessels. We certainly, with every passing year, know that Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and dementia are attack on our neurons by our own white blood cells. So, and where did all this attack start? It started in leaky gut, in my and now many other people's opinion. And the good news is we can measure this. We can show that it can progressively repair and be fixed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, we can measure. I use a company called Vibrant America, Vibrant Wellness, which uses blood tests. Mm-hmm. You can actually do finger prick blood tests that will look at anti-zonulin IgG, anti-actin IgG, anti-LPS. LPSs are lipopolysaccharides, which are bacterial cell walls. And so you can measure these things and you can quantify how leaky the wall of your gut is. You can quantify how active your immune system is making antibodies to various components of food. One of the things that I write about in the book, which I think shocks most people when they have these things measured, is if we look at someone with a leaky gut, and that's just about anyone who walks in my office with whatever complaint they have, they'll have 100% of them have antibodies to the various forms of gluten. About 98% of them will have antibodies to wheat germ agglutinin, which is in whole wheat. And these are many people who have not eaten gluten in 10 years, and yet they have active antibodies against gluten. Ah, great question. So normally, I talk a lot about this in the book. Normally, our gut microbiome, those 100 trillion organisms that live in our gut, educate our immune system about what's important and what's not important. It's a way of saying, look, we've got your back. Anything that, you know, this idiot swallows or breathes, we're going to take care of it. If it's bad bacteria, bad viruses, if it's plant lectins, we're ready. We know how to handle it. you guys, 80% of your immune system sits on the other side of the wall of your gut. And normally, I lived in England for a while. I compare them to a Bobby on the street with a billy club, and that's his only armament. And now, so not much would get through past this protective barrier and the wall of our gut. Now, unfortunately, as I talk about in the book, our gut microbiome is decimated by the foods we eat, how we actively try to kill it with the foods we eat, how we try to starve it with the foods we eat. So that barrier is basically gone. And that education to our immune system is gone. So now we've got an immune system that, rather than a Bobby with a billy club, now our immune system is armed with a Kevlar vest, two AK-47s, and their fingers are on the trigger. And they're ready for, you know, anything that even looks out of the ordinary. They're going to shoot to kill and ask questions later. I think the easiest way for people to understand this, that I talked about actually in one of my early books, about 95% of us are born with a preformed antibody to the peanut lectin. And I'm old enough to remember that we all took peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to school. Mm-hmm. We all passed out the peanuts on the airplanes. Mm-hmm. And nobody had reactions. Nobody. Yeah. So now, of course, a kid brings a peanut butter jelly sandwich to school and, you know, five kids are reaching for their EpiPen to give them a shot.
Right.
It's like, what the heck happened? Well, back in the good old days, even though we had these antibodies to a peanut lectin, our microbiome said, yeah.
We'll deal with it.
Not a big deal. We got it. You know, just relax. Don't get your panties in a wad. Well, now our gut microbiome doesn't educate our immune system. Now the wall of our gut is porous. And even something like gluten, which actually we have bacteria that could eat if they were still here, even gluten now is, oh my gosh, you know, that's terrible. Now, what's exciting about all this? And the reason I keep seeing patients is, so we'll take a person, has, bright red antibodies to the various forms of wheat when we see them. Every 3 months, we do a new blood test, looking at the degree of leaky gut and looking for these antibodies. And every 3 months, we see that the leaky gut gets better and that these antibodies begin to disappear, so that by 6 months, 9 months, a year, these people who had really strong antibodies to gluten and wheat, they don't have any antibodies anymore. They have disappeared. What happened? Well, two things happened. Number one, the leaky gut got repaired, so now we no longer have troublemakers coming through the wall of the gut. And our immune system is no longer got their finger on the trigger.
Not ready to attack.
Right. And the other great thing is, because that border is now intact, the immune system basically goes have a cigarette and a donut, like we just. It's a little more in depth than that. One of the things that we should realize is certainly the North American diet that now we're trying to spread throughout the world is loaded with antibiotics. Either we feed our animals antibiotics. The recent paper out last week looking at antibiotics and glyphosate in fast food meals, and every fast food meal surveyed was loaded with veterinary antibiotics in the burgers, in the chicken, and all the fries and things had glyphosate, Roundup, in them. And this is, it's illegal to do this, but there's a catch that if a veterinarian thinks an animal is sick in a chicken warehouse of 100,000 chickens or in a factory feedlot. You're allowed to feed antibiotics to everybody just to treat that one chicken and legally do it. So there's and it makes these animals grow fast. So how do those antibiotics then end up in us? Well, we eat a burger and it's in us and it kills off our microbiome. So yeah, our microbiome has been decimated. The other thing that I write about in the book, which is now well known, is the microbiome wants to eat soluble fibers. These are long chain sugar molecules that we do not digest, but that arrive in our small bowel and our colon. And this is what these guys need to eat, and they love them. Our processed foods and ultra processed foods, we've stripped all that away. And so there is nothing for them to eat, and they literally starve to death. Now, interestingly enough, we have a fallback, and I talk about it in the book. The intestine, our bowel is the same surface area as a tennis court inside of us. Now, we have basically a shag carpet that is our intestinal lining. I mean, there's all these little villi and microvilli that project out into our intestines. And I used to be a general surgeon, so I got to see this shag carpet all the time. So that's where the surface area comes from. So at the bottom of these microvilli, there are what are called crypts. And these crypts actually contain a deposit of very important bacteria. We call them keystone species. And they have a deposit of stem cells, since we were talking off camera about that. Yeah. And they're down there, we think, because they're kind of in hiding. And they actually have a little privileged position where nothing can really get to them. And we think that they're there because, you know, nuclear disasters like swallowing antibiotics happen all the time. And they have the potential to be coaxed out of these crypts and repopulate. Mm-hmm. Now, that's how do we do that? Well, one of the things that I think is really important for people to realize that was based on research done by the husband and wife team in Stanford, the Sonnenbergs, that I talk about in the book, and I've talked about them before. I'm a big fan. We all know that fiber is important, and we got to feed our gut microbiome fiber. And, you know, that's the key. Well, not so fast. They took humans, and they divided them into two groups. One group got a ton of fiber. And most of the fiber was a fiber called inulin, which I write about. It's in artichokes. It's in Jerusalem artichokes, sunchokes. It's in asparagus. Mm-hmm. It's in chicory. So they got that. The other group got that, but they also got fermented foods, primarily yogurts and kefirs, vinegars. They got some kimchi and some sauerkraut, but most of the fermented foods was from yogurt.
Okay.
And they looked at their gut microbiome diversity. Diversity means you really want to have a lot of different bacteria. So I spend several chapters trying to explain, well, why is that? Well, again, what we're realizing is there may be bacteria that produce some really important short chain fatty acids like butyrate. And I've spent a couple books educating people about what are called postbiotics, and butyrate is a biggie. But the bacteria that produce that actually need other bacterial products, other short chain fatty acids that are the product of fermentation, like vinegar, for instance, acetic acid, acetate, to actually take fiber and then make butyrate. And without this kind of assembly line of different species of bacteria and different precursors, you could swallow all the fiber in the world and get nowhere. So a physician has to order it. You can come to Gundry, drgundry.com. You can contact, I have a telemedicine program called Gundry Health, and it can be done. And it's actually really easy to do. We send you a kit with a finger. I just had a very good friend, I won't mention his name, who's big in the health community and has written bunches of books. And I think that's an exciting part of where all this is going. Part of the challenge has been, okay, who really are the keystone species that we really, really have to have? Who are the role players who they don't get a lot of attention, but without the role players, like, you know, basketball team.
Right.
If you don't have a bunch of good role players, you could have all the superstars, but you know, you're not going to win the championship. And so we're finding that these role players and understanding what role they have is probably the missing link in all this. There are preparations, sometimes they're called helmets, that are a bunch of bacteria. I have a patient in LA who gets Thai helmets from Thailand and has his Thai helmets every day. He had leaky gut. He doesn't anymore. But when he misbehaves, he has it again. And then we have to start all over. It's not. So, yes, it's important to have the right bunch of bacteria. It's also really important to feed them what they need to eat, or to have the precursors. And I have a whole chapter, which is, I think, interesting. It's called Dead Men Tell No Tales, But Dead Bacteria Do. And one of the things that's an eye-opener is that most people have heard of probiotics, friendly bacteria.
Right.
Most people now understand prebiotics, which are the foods that friendly bacteria want to eat. And then there's a whole concept that I actually was one of the first people to introduce it, called postbiotics. And postbiotics are the material, the compounds that bacteria produce. I used to call them bacterial poops. It's what they produce after eating prebiotics. So the probiotics eat the prebiotics and they produce postbiotics. What's exciting is that some of these postbiotics are actually the dead bodies of bacteria, bacterial cell walls, and they carry information. And other bacteria literally read the information on these dead bacteria. So, I mean, yogurt, most yogurts don't have any living bacteria. And even if they were living, the acid in our stomach will destroy them. Most fermented foods don't have any living bacteria, but they have plenty of dead bacteria. Mm-hmm. And they carry information. I write about in the book, there's a keystone species in the gut called Akkermansia mucinophilia. And
it's a mouthful.
Mucus-loving Akkermansia. And it actually lives in the mucus layer of our gut. The mucus is really important. Mucus, among other things, traps lectins. Mucus is a lot of sugar molecules. Mm-hmm. And lectins are sugar-seeking proteins. Anyhow. The more mucus you have lining your gut, the better off you are. Akkermansia lives in the mucus layer and eats mucus. Now, that doesn't sound like a very good idea.
No.
But the more mucus it eats, the more our gut wall produces more mucus. So it's actually a net win. And we know that people who have the most Akkermansia as they age incredibly well and have a great health span. So there's a company in the United States that makes living Akkermansia, and there's a company actually from Israel that makes dead Akkermansia, and they sell them as supplements. And I talk about in the book, the weird thing is that both of them work in slightly different ways. And so the dead Akkermansia, how's that working? Well, other bacteria basically go, oh, you know, there's Akkermansia. He's here. They're just reading the wall of this. And okay, Akkermansia is here. We can start the party and, you know, we can do what we need to do. And it wasn't living Akkermansia so much as, oh, Akkermansia is here.
Well, it sounds like those cells are being reprogrammed, right? The dead cells, the dead bacteria is going in, picking up on the information, it's being like, ah, here is the, the notes, and we'll continue.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Your work is fascinating, Dr. Gundry. Like, I could just, as I was saying, picture like, the work really going to where you've mapped this stuff out to such a level where if you could crack that code, which is like, what is the combination and you know, what is that, the different roles that each play and what they need, this is going to be life-changing. I mean, this is the next level of medicine. Right.
Well, it really is. And in the distinctions that we're beginning to see, I'll give you an example. There's a big microbiome meeting in Paris every fall that I usually present at. And like, for instance, last year, there was a fascinating paper out of Italy looking at a bacteria that's in raw milk cheeses. Mm-hmm. And this bacteria makes compounds that make people not hungry, that it affects their satiety. And if the milk is pasteurized before it's made into cheese, that bacteria is killed. And that same cheese won't have that effect. Mm-hmm. And it's that subtle a finding. There's another paper that there's a bacteria that eats seaweed in Japan, and it produces a compound that makes you not very hungry. And it's this bacteria that actually accounts for a large part of why the Japanese, is, in general, are quite thin. And it's this bacteria and its compound. I'll give you a really exciting example. And I talk all about in the book about how the microbiome affects our mood, affects, there's even a bacteria that's, it's actually in one of my products that grows hair and makes your skin beautiful, but it also produces oxytocin. And a lot of people recognize the hormone oxytocin as the love hormone. And this bacteria actually makes the love hormone. And it's perhaps that glow of when you're in love, it's probably that bacteria that's, you know, doing that glow.
It sounds like the fountain of youth. It makes you younger, makes your hair longer, and makes you more lovable or loving.
Yeah. And so
very cool.
And you know, and the hilarious, the sad thing is that when you look at people's microbiome, that for most people, this bacteria just either doesn't exist anymore or is just in such low population that, you know.
So once you do the test, you'll be able to specifically say, these are the bacteria that are missing in your microbiome. And here are some practices, diets, foods to now start reintroducing into your diet right now, which should naturally start to bring back some of these bacteria and create these different bacteria. Is that correct? Yeah,
that's correct. What's even more exciting about that, so we can heal somebody's leaky gut, and there's actually good supplements to help with that. But as I tell my patients, I can seal your gut, but if you keep swallowing razor blades every day, if you, you know, have your bowl of Wheaties, or if you have your bran cereal, or in some people, if you have tomatoes with peels and seeds, or if you don't have properly cooked beans, you're just swallowing razor blades and you're just going to slice it right open. So it's kind of a two-part thing. And that was really the plant paradox. There are plants that don't want us to eat them. Mm-hmm. You got to know who your friends are. And I, you know, I'm a confirmed plant predator, but I know who my friends are and who I should try to avoid.
What's your thought on kale? I've heard mixed reviews on kale.
So interesting that you should bring that up. Kale is a part of the brassica family, like broccoli and cauliflower. Kale does like to concentrate some heavy metals in its leaves. I'm not a big kale eater, but just as a general rule, some people hear that cruciferous vegetables are really good for you. And there are some really cool compounds in cruciferous vegetables. Sulforaphane is one of them. But if you eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables, you suppress your thyroid function. In fact, I just saw a gentleman yesterday who I had not seen before, but had been on a very high cruciferous diet, particularly a lot of kale, and because it's so good for him. And his thyroid was screwed up. He had low thyroid. And I'm going, I said, do you use iodized salt? And the wife says, yeah, we do. Yeah, iodized sea salt. I said, okay. So it's not that. I said, do you eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables? And they were looking at each other. I said, oh, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, kale. And his eyes lit up. He says, oh, man, gosh, yeah, I have a kale smoothie every day. And Brussels sprouts, we must have them 4 or 5 times a week. I said, okay, well, this is fine. We're just going to, you know, really back off on those. I don't need to do any more workup. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, when these people back off on those, without any other presto changeo, their thyroid's back to normal.
I'm smiling right now because I have these aeroponic growing systems. They're called tower gardens.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool system. You know, the roots grow through water and stuff. And one of them is filled with bok choy, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, kale. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, maybe we need to sort of, you know, rethink that tower and do it a little less. And we don't eat a lot. I mean, you know, kale was brought up to me a while ago that it's a little, could be rough and we don't digest it well, but I didn't realize the impact on the thyroid. Brussels sprouts every once in a while, but broccoli, we're big broccoli eaters. I mean, it's, you know, I always thought broccoli was like, you know, the broom that comes and cleans you out type of thing. So, but too much broccoli can actually have a negative effect on and reduce that thyroid. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it does happen. It's interesting, but you got to eat a lot of it. I try to get my patients to really introduce the chicory family of vegetables, radicchio, frisee, chicory, Belgian endive. It's remarkable to me. I spend a lot of time looking at south of France and Italy and long-lived cultures in the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And it amazes me how prevalent chicory family vegetables are. In fact, I just had some puntarella last night, which is a chicory family. And it's just amazing that it's so prevalent. And it's because it has all this great inulin in it. And it's really great food for gut buddies, as I call them.
Yeah. Well, you just gave me my answer for the tower garden, which is one's going to be all chicory. You know, have you seen the show 100 Years? It's the show about the Blue Zones on Netflix.
I have not seen it recently, but as you know, I have a whole chapter in Gut Check debunking the Blue Zones.
Oh, I did not know that you had a debunking those. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's always fun. Well, most people aren't aware of how the term Blue Zone even came up.
There was a guy that branded it.
Yeah, well, yeah, Dan Buttner has branded it. But Dan was a reporter for National Geographic, and he was actually at a meeting in Montpellier, France, a number of years ago, where there was a map of the world, and a researcher got up with a blue magic marker, a blue felt tip pen and started drawing circles around places in the world that he thought were the longest living people. No research behind it. It was, this is where I think the longest living people are. Okay. And it was the blue magic marker. So the blue zones is a magic marker. Which I think is rather hilarious. And so I'll use a couple of examples. One of the blue zones. First of all, I'm the only nutritionist who spent most of my career living in a blue zone, which was Loma Linda, California, and the only blue zone in North America.
In the US.
To tell me what my blue zone was like is kind of fun because that's where I was a professor. So, but let's look at Sardinia. Sardinia is one of the blue zones. Now, unfortunately, the whole island of Sardinia is not a blue zone. It's only the people who live in the mountainous regions. And they've compared the longevity in the mountains versus the longevity by the sea, and they're totally different. There is no longevity in people who live down by the sea. What is different? Well, it turns out that they're sheep herders and goat herders in the mountains, and they're not down by the sea. They're also heavily smokers. The men, about 95% of the men smoke. About 25% of the women smoke.
In the mountains or down by the sea?
Up by in the mountains.
Okay.
What's unique is the longevity of the mountainous people is because the men live as long or longer than the women, which is contrary to all other cultures, the men. And so it's the male smokers that pull up their life expectancy. And they eat large amounts of goat and sheep milk products, cheeses. They make a pecorino cheese from sheep. They eat sheep and goat yogurt every day. So it's actually, we should probably call them a white zone because they're smoking cigarettes and having white cheeses and yogurts. And as I've written in my other books, that's the factor that gives them longevity. The same is true in Crete, the island of Ikara. There are heavy smokers. The interesting thing about the Nagoyan Peninsula in Costa Rica.
That was about an hour from me.
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is that it's true that the diet in Costa Rica is heavily based on beans and corn. No question about it, except for the Nagoyan Peninsula, where they are sheep herders. And they, in studies, have shown that it's the sheep products that they view as giving them the longevity, and that the corn and beans are a negative aspect of their diet that's compensated for by the sheep products. Right. And I spent a whole book explaining why that is.
So you're saying you go to the mountains and you smoke cigarettes and you eat cheese, you just might live a long time, but you're going to have to do it up in the mountains.
Yeah. Well, and because for instance, the longest living country on Earth, the country with the longest life expectancy, is a little tiny country between France and Spain in the Pyrenees Mountains called Andorra. The Andorrans have a life expectancy of about 90 years, which is the highest in the world. Guess what? They're sheep farmers, and they also eat a lot of sausages. And so their diet is basically sheep and sausages. And yet they're the longest living people in the world.
So this might sound like a silly question, but it's the cheeses and the dairy from the sheep and the goat, does it provide good bacteria that's contributing to a good microbiome? Or it's two separate conversations?
Better than that. Goat and sheep have 30% of the fat are medium chain triglycerides, MCT. In fact, medium chain triglycerides are actually named after goats, capric acid, caprylic acid, because they were first identified in goats. Now, what that means, and I've written a book, Unlocking the Keto Code, that MCTs actually uncouple mitochondria, and with it makes mitochondria healthier and fitter, and people who have the most uncoupled mitochondria live the longest and live the best. So these people, isn't it interesting that 4 out of the 5 blue zones, actually, it's the sheep and goat products that they consume, which is unique to those areas.
Yeah, yeah. And not a normal diet for a lot of these other areas like North America. In fact, from our last episode, I got into an MCT supplement, and you know, we have it in our coffee every day now. So thank you, by the way.
Yeah, they're very useful. And I mean, it's fascinating that, and they're not present in cow's milk. So it's these, you know, sheep goat herders that are getting the benefits.
And what about raw milk from cows? Obviously better than just pasteurized milk, but
So again, the Italian study would suggest that certainly keeping the bacterial population alive during the process of making cheese or yogurt is an important factor, and I think we'll learn more and more about that as time progresses. The other thing that we know about truly aged cheeses is that they have these really cool compounds called polyamines. The most famous is spermidine, which is a very life-enhancing compound. The other thing that I talk about towards the end of the book that I talked about in The Plant Paradox, but now there's new information, and that's this sugar molecule called NU5GC. NU5GC, we have sugar molecules that line the wall of our gut, that line our blood vessels, that line our blood-brain barrier, that line our joints, that are called NU5AC. Beef, lamb, cows, sheep, goats, pork, pigs, all have a very similar sugar molecule called NU5GC, and it's also in milk. Mm-hmm. Chicken and fish have NU5AC. NU5AC, which we have, differs from NU5GC by one molecule of oxygen. They're otherwise identical. When you and I, or healthy volunteers, eat NU5GC, we make antibodies to it as a foreign molecule, and instantaneously. And the more NU5GC containing foods we eat, the more antibodies against it we make. Now, so what? Well, when I wrote The Plant Paradox, there's a strong association between red meat eating and heart disease, dementia, arthritis, and cancer. Now, association does not mean causation. I agree with that.
That was going to be my next question, which is, you know, how firm is it that it's causing versus
just so the- we thought that because these molecules are virtually identical, and because we make antibodies to NU5GC, that we attacked our own NU5AC through what's called molecular mimicry. We made a mistake. And so we had an autoimmunity. Well, now it's been discovered that NU5GC in our diet can displace the NU5AC that lines our blood vessels, that lines our blood-brain barrier, that lines our joint, and instead plug itself in. So now the lining of our blood vessels, for instance, is full of an antigen, Nu5GC, and we actively attack it. We know that cancer tumors use Nu5GC to create local inflammation that improves their metabolism. We don't make Nu5GC, so cancer cells have to acquire it from the diet. So now I'm making a very strong case. We now know the association, and we know the causation. Now, the exciting thing is, you can displace Nu5GC by eating more Nu5AC foods and eating less Nu5GC. The other thing that's exciting, which explains how these Andorrans eat sausages every day and don't have heart disease, fermentation kills Nu5GC. The bacteria eat it. They love Nu5GC. So all these cultures that traditionally ferment sausages, and that's how you preserve meat, right, there's no Nu5GC in these sausages.
But there is in the red meat.
And no, it's gone as long as it's in sausage form.
Okay, but if it wasn't in sausage form, it's there. If it was like in a steak format or, you know, a tenderloin type of thing, it's there.
Believe it or not, it's highest in liver. So all these guys who are, you know, get your organ meats. I'm sorry, if you want to coat your blood vessels with Nu5GC, have a piece of liver. Yeah. Sorry.
I'll share a quick story with you. When I was a kid, I used to eat liver, not realizing it was liver. Later on in life, you grow up, and I think we were at the dinner table, my mother said, "Hey, do you want some liver?" And I looked at her, and I was like, "Are you mad?" I'm like, "That's the grossest thing I'd ever eaten in my life." She's like, "You've been eating this your entire life," and like that. It clicked in. Anyway, I'm glad I don't eat it anymore, as per what you just said. All right.
So, by the way, the fermentation of milk is loaded with Nu5GC. So if you ferment it, like in yogurt, like in kefir, or in traditional cheeses, the Nu5GC is gone. So like Parmesan cheese doesn't have any Nu5GC. But regular milk does.
Yeah, it's so complicated food. I mean, it's not. I mean, it's very simple, but I mean, for traditionally the way we've learned food and sort of what is promoted and programmed to us. And, you know, I was recently traveling and I was in Toronto and, you know, you went to order food and you almost at an unconscious sort of level, you know, start falling right back into that fast food, into that restaurant, into the... And I was there for a week, and I got to tell you, by the end of the week, because I'm pretty healthy from a food standpoint in Costa Rica, I mean, everything's just fresh here, right? And there is no fast food restaurants where I live, right? I mean, we're in the jungle somewhat. So, you know, you instantly feel it, All right, yeah. We're coming to the top of the hour, man. I can't believe this. The time has flown. I appreciate you so much. I said earlier, I really appreciate the work. I've been following you for a while in my own... You know, exercise to be healthy. Gut health became a big thing. I get screened for cancer every year. They remove polyps every year. And it was the beginning of, you know, getting into your work that we started to see some shift in my own results, right? And today, which was exciting, because I'll hop on your website. I want to do the leaky gut test and go from there. So normally at the end of the episode, we ask the better human question, which is, what do you think we could all do to be better humans? But I think in this case, I'm going to ask you, what do you think we could all do to have better gut health after today?
I'll move to Costa Rica.
That's an easy answer.
You know, I think one of the easiest things to do is start adding fermented foods to your diet. That's actually pretty easy to do. One of the easiest things to do is start using vinegars. Vinegars I invented the fake Coke where you put balsamic vinegar in sparkling water. It's an easy thing to do. We have probably 10 vinegars that we have at any one time. And, you know, we're putting them on salads and putting them in water.
Can I take a teaspoon of vinegar?
Yeah. Have a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar. It's easy to do. It's easy to do. Right. That's number one. I think Number two, I've talked about this now for three things. You've got to give your gut a rest for a good portion of the 24-hour period. The gut really, Americans bombard their gut 16 hours a day, Americans eat. And your gut needs a whole lot longer time to relax, to repair. Repair work has to be done. And I think a lot of time-restricted eating and intermittent fasting, the effect is from the fact that your gut has 16, 18 hours of downtime for repair work.
Right.
You got to take a car out of service for repair work. You got to take an airplane out of service for air work, for repair work. And you got to take your gut out of service probably on a 24-hour basis.
Yeah. You know, we need to do it mentally as well. We need to rest, right? You see professional athletes, they train hard, and there's what is built in a restoration practice, the healing practice, right? Because without that, you overextend your muscles, you overextend yourself, and this is where injury happens. It makes so much sense. I mean, it would apply to our gut as well. So from a, I'm an intermittent faster. What is there a better practice in regard to time? Like, you know, start eating at this time to this time?
Yeah. So, you know, Mark Matheson from the NIH, who's now at Penn State, has done human studies. It looks like probably the best window is a 6-hour eating window, maybe 7 or 8. He's done it with 4-hour eating windows. There was no additional benefit. During the winter, I do a 2-hour eating window from January through June. But it sounds like 6 hours is a pretty good.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, noon to six eating. Or variations on that.
Okay. And for the audience, you can't see this, but Dr. Gundry has got this special concoction drink. So I wanted to ask you, what is that drink that you're drinking?
So that's my Power Blues and Essential Orange. There's a plug.
Oh, cool.
From Gundry MD. And it's full of polyphenols and friendly bacteria. And one of the things that's interesting is that, unbeknownst to most people, polyphenols are these dark, bright plant compounds that actually protect plant mitochondria from harm. And it turns out our bacteria love polyphenols. They're some of the bacteria's favorite foods. Who knew? So the idea that you should be eating brightly colored leaves, fruits, and vegetables is actually because the bacteria want those polyphenols. And they, in turn, turn these compounds into accessible things that uncouple our mitochondria. So I like to uncouple my mitochondria all the time.
Amazing. Well, after the show, I'm going to jump on your website. I'm going to do a big order. I'm going to restock. In fact, I need to get your leaky gut supplement. What was it called? It was called...
Total Restore and BioComplete 3. Those are the 1-2 punch.
I was on them religiously for a long time.
They're actually our two biggest sellers because they work. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. But if you keep swallowing razor blades, you'll just slice things open again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's where you, for the audience, I mean, those razor blades, Plant Paradox, is an excellent book to
and Gut Check has all of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm excited to finish your new book. I got a copy of it, so I'm well on it. And again, your work is amazing, Dr. Gundry, and appreciate you. We're coming to the end, my man. I've kept you over time. So we're going to pause here for the audience. But to the audience, do you want to just drop your websites again, Dr. Gundry?
So drgundry.com. My supplement food site is gundrymd.com. And come visit me on my YouTube channels, the Dr. Gundry podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully I pop up waving at you on wherever you're searching the internet. And
it's hard to miss you on the internet. All right. Pop up everywhere. All right. To the audience, once again, if you like today's episode, don't forget to like, don't forget to share, don't forget to subscribe, and stay happy, stay healthy. Look after your gut. Go check out some of Dr. Gundry's products, specifically if you're having some of those challenges and autoimmune challenges. Definitely a good resource to go and start, and definitely pick up the new book, Gut Check. Until then, we will see you next time.